Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned, and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Today on the podcast, we have Tom Stancliffe, who is one of the co-founders of Tribe Nutrition. They just make really good protein supplements that is completely vegan friendly, and there's just no like additives and chemicals. So they're very like of the moment and a really nice thing to be supporting. And I should just pre-frame this entire interview with the fact that I am an investor in Tribe Nutrition. So it is in my interest to be promoting them and telling you how good they are. But also, as someone who likes the planet and such, it's also in my interest to be promoting them because they're a good company doing good things. And also, it's just a really cool story, which is why I reached out to them. I'm an investor in lots of companies, most of whom I haven't put on the podcast. But Tribe is a really cool company doing cool things. So I'm very happy to be talking to them. And yeah, we go into how the business started, he was a lawyer for many years and had to break out of like a cycle of a normal job that most people feel like they have to be doing, and starting a funky wellness nutrition company with a bunch of mates that you run marathons with, which is a pretty cool thing to go and do. So yeah, I think you will really enjoy the interview. Calling all humans who want to increase their skills. It's time to explore and deepen existing passions and get lost in creativity with Skillshare's online classes. What you find might just surprise and inspire you. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers memberships with a meaning. There's so much to explore and real projects to create, and the support of other fellow creators going on, Skillshare really empowers you just to accomplish growth and success in what you want to do. It's also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than £10 a month. I've really enjoyed the YouTube success tutorials, and also their productivity ones are just super useful for making you a more productive human. They're a great company, and they are very proud to be sponsoring the Growth Mindset podcast. So you can explore your creativity at skillshare.com/growth mindset and get 2 free months of premium membership. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of different classes for free. Whether you want to learn to code or handstand, everything's there. Get started and join today by heading to skillshare.com/growth mindset. Welcome to the Growth Mindset podcast. It's my pleasure to have you here. I'm here in the Tribe offices to interview Tom, who is one of the co-founders of a very cool company that I'm an investor in and have been following for a while. And I really want to get involved with some of the things that you guys do besides just making food. But yeah, firstly, I'd like to just break into your story a little bit and find out a bit more about you and where you're coming from. So could you try and give me your life story in 3 minutes?
Yeah, sure. Lots of the Tribe journey began in 2011, 2012, when myself and two of my best friends, Guy and Rob, I was working as a corporate lawyer in the city, but every spare moment we had, we used to go off running. Working as a corporate lawyer, you used to have to work kind of all hours of the day. But I remember training for the Marathon des Sables in 2012 and kind of finishing a corporate deal at sort of 8 p.m. one February evening and going and doing a marathon training afterwards. So that was very much just the mindset we were in. We were in our sort of mid to late 20s, completely addicted to running, taking on these amazing challenges like Marathon des Sables. And yeah, just I suppose, like lots of people, kind of looking for something more than their professional life was giving them, looking for a challenge, just loving being outdoors, being in nature. Doing Marathon des Sables then led on to a project called Run for Love in 2013, which was a 1,000-mile run across Eastern Europe to fight human trafficking. And it was one of those moments in life where you invested everything in a project and it just went amazingly well. Something like 250 people came and joined us on this 1,000-mile run, and we got huge amounts of publicity and we raised about £250,000, and in the process learned a huge amount about ourselves, about community, about nutrition, and also about how to do things. So I suppose in that moment we decided that we wanted to set up Tribe. Tribe is the UK's leading vegan natural performance nutrition brand. So we make 100% natural plant-based protein bars, protein shakes, energy bars. Launched in 2015, very much inspired by Run for Love, while we were training for Run for Love, we hated that all the nutrition we could see on the market was synthetic and gels and full of an ingredients list as long as your arm. And we wanted to create a natural plant-based alternative to those products. So yes, that was what Tribe is about. And I suppose one of the big things we carry forward from that 1,000-mile run across Eastern Europe is just the idea of community, the belief that if you do things with other people and you bring people into things, you can go further and faster. So that's why we're called Tribe, because we don't just make natural vegan products, but we also organize something like 3 or 4 events every week, ranging from across Europe, ultramarathons to bike rides to yoga events to other things. And all of these events are fundraising for our sister charity, the Tribe Freedom Foundation, that's all about fighting modern slavery. So yeah, so that's kind of how Tribe started and the kind of journey we're sort of 3 years into now. It's very exciting.
Cool. So how did you go about turning Tribe into like a business then? So it was like the three of you were doing a lot of running and fun stuff, and then like doing charity events. How did you then go about, okay, we're going to make a whole set of nutrition products around this?
Well, it was around 2015. I suppose we'd probably made a mental decision that we really wanted to set up a business in the kind of health, well-being, fitness space. We just hated being on a beautiful mountainside or doing something very healthy and opening up this kind of shiny metallic energy gel that had 200 ingredients. So I suppose we said there must be a way to create a kind of natural plant-based alternative to this. It was around the time as well that Graze was really coming into public consciousness, sort of direct-to-consumer food. So it kind of, it made lots of sense to us, this idea that if you were training for a 5K, 10K marathon, you would have quite a kind of regular training routine. So it made sense to us to apply, I suppose, let's call it the Graze model, i.e. direct-to-consumer subscription foods, but apply that to kind of fitness using kind of natural plant-based food. So that was kind of the original genesis of Tribe. It was a kind of direct-to-consumer, regular delivery of natural plant-based protein bars, protein shakes, energy bars. It's a mixture looking back on it now, because half of you is like, oh my God, we knew nothing. And you went from this world of being a corporate lawyer to suddenly making energy bars. And you're like, oh my gosh, how did I ever make that kind of jump mentally to think I could do it? Also, at the same time, thinking when I look back at the first stuff you did, like, God, that was so cool. Because in that time when you just set up, you're just putting absolutely every ounce of creativity, energy, thought into something. And that is a very powerful thing. And inevitably, when you're 3 or 4 years into something, you're still doing that, but I think in a different way. And you haven't perhaps got that kind of every, you know, we sometimes joke when we get up our old emails from the start, but even the most seemingly now irrelevant decisions, we would be, you know, so passionate about and so like, God, this, you know, really matters. We have to get right. And I think that's a really powerful thing. So I suppose, yeah, looking back, it's how on earth did we think we could do it, knowing as little as we did at that point about nutrition? But also thinking, God, it's a very powerful thing, that kind of drive and, in a sense, desperation that you have, because you've got to move pretty quickly if you're going to keep getting investors. And also that your instincts are often right. I mean, if tomorrow you were going to, I don't know, set up like a sofa business, your instincts on how the sofa industry could be improved are right, because you're at some point you bought a sofa, or do you know what I mean? And I think that's the same, like the same with nutrition. Our instinct was super valuable that there was no natural plant-based alternatives to, because we were like,
other people are thinking it somewhere else as well.
Exactly. So that's why I know people sometimes say, and I'm not sure I totally agree with it, but when people say you can set up a business in any category and it's all about execution, I don't agree with it, because I definitely think there's something in our experience and passion for fitness and natural foods that makes us able to do what we're doing. But I definitely think there's a lot in that thing that, like, great businesses often start from a very simple instinctive belief on how something can be improved.
Yeah, that's interesting. Have you got any like tips in like terms of digital marketing? Like, what has been like the most effective thing, would you say, as a strategy?
Well, almost all of our online business originally came through Facebook and Instagram ads. Definitely owe a lot to those platforms. I think, you know, it's this sort of well-known thing. I mean, getting the creative right is super important. Getting really, you know, good imagery, good videos, that kind of stuff. It just really helps make the brand stand out.
In terms of the
three of you that started the business, what are the different roles that you took on? Because I guess you must all have different strengths. It's a bit of a nightmare when you all just do the same thing as founders. So, because you came from like a background in legal with the others.
Yeah. None of us, the short answer is none of us really do anything that was relevant to our skill sets before. I do the marketing, Rob does the finance and the operations, and Guy does the commercial sales side. I think we were really lucky. So, we've known each other a long time. I suppose we were also used to doing things like ultra marathons together. So we were used to kind of operating under adversity. And I think, over time, we've kind of found our roles. I mean, they haven't always been those roles, but we've always had a pretty clear idea of what our respective skills were and how we could contribute best. And I think if you are very good friends, it is inevitable if you run a business with people that you're going to have moments where you aren't sort of sitting in a circle singing Kumbaya or whatever. You are going to argue or have differences, but I think because we were very good friends, I think deep down we listen to each other and we respond to feedback, criticism between each other. I think that's super important. I think where things go wrong with founders is where that stops happening. And I think if you're very good friends at the start, that means that you're much more likely to sort of listen and be constructive when things go wrong or need improving, which is really cool. So we're really lucky in that respect.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounds really nice. Do you think part of when, you sort of had like the idea of like, well, okay, you wanted to change nutrition, but I think the other side of it was actually you just wanted to work together and you kind of wanted an excuse to like leave the current problems that you have with your job and stuff?
I think I just love, and I've always just been someone that loves the sense of having a kind of mission in what I do, having a kind of sense of purpose. And I'm not just saying this, I honestly wake up frustratingly at 4:30 lots of mornings of the week kind of excited to go and do day. I have that. I'm a sort of person, in whatever it would be, I'm quite a sort of passionate person in that way. I love being passionate about what I do, and I think if you are that kind of person, being a corporate lawyer is probably not for you. We had a strong sense that we wanted to do something that was a kind of project and was about trying to build something, and I think that probably was the draw towards entrepreneurship. And I think obviously the kind of love of fitness, natural foods and the outdoors kind of worked alongside that.
Could we just like backtrack into like corporate law for a second? So what was it that first attracted you to corporate law that made you think that was the right thing for you?
I was doing history at Oxford. I mean, it was just a deeply unoriginal thing to have done, to do corporate law. Lots of people that did history at, Oxford did that. Because, it was an option. It was a super successful career. If I'm honest, it probably was a bit immature at the time. And I didn't really think, how do I want to spend my life? I just thought this is a successful, good thing to do. I've got a kind of good analytical brain. So it's an option to do corporate law. And I don't think I really thought. And I think also, I would say the big turning point for me was doing Run for Love, organizing that 1,000-mile run, because it was the first time I'd ever done anything entrepreneurial. And, it's amazing to say that because I was 28 at the time, but it really kind of sparked something in me. And I think, it is easy to kind of sometimes go through life without really deeply thinking, what do I actually want to do? How do I want to spend my days? Or just trying something entrepreneurial. So I probably just fell into corporate law.
Really nice to do, because a lot of people kind of think that maybe they want to do something entrepreneurial but they think they can or something, and that you kind of need some validation to say that you are an entrepreneur or to do a degree in it. And it's you can just go and do it. As in, you also hear tales of people who are entrepreneurs since they were seven or something and selling kids sweets and stuff. That's great, but actually you didn't have to be doing that. You can turn your life around at 30 and just sort of suddenly start doing these things.
I actually totally agree, and actually I think about that exact thing that you just said a lot. And actually I should say I still feel a bit about whatever it would be, imposter syndrome or a nightclub promoter when I was 15 making but I totally agree. I think I definitely think that it's like any muscle, you can train it. And I think everyone has it in them to kind of do it, whether you're 30 or 60. I mean, often people say lots of best entrepreneurs actually start later in life because, they've got a very clear kind of area of experience from their job that they then apply into something entrepreneurial.
In terms of saying focusing on your product, how do you make sure it is the best? What do you do to make it the best product it can be? Because when you spoke about what different things, roles you guys have, none of you are food nutritionists or experts in taste or these kind of things. So how did you go about that side of things?
We just spend a lot of time on it, really. Well, I should say, first up, we work very closely with a kind of amazing person called Sarah King, who's a former product developer at Innocent Drinks. And we work on a kind of freelance basis with lots of nutritionist consultants. But key way is just to kind of obsess about every aspect of A, the production of the product, but also the feedback you're getting. So, you know, in any week, currently maybe doing anywhere between 2 and 4 focus groups. So, you know, just sitting down with members of the tribe community and nothing clever, just saying, taste this product. What do you think? How could it be improved? Like I say, food's not a sort of amazingly complex thing. Would you like the taste? Do you like the texture? Is it great value? Would you buy that again? And that's where the tribe community is such an amazing thing, because in any week, you know, we might have 4 or 5 events that involve the tribe community. So getting that real-time feedback is vital. And also you learn very quickly that with food, you've got to get it perfect, because you are going to, if you're feeling hungry after this and you walk into Sainsbury's, you're going to buy a snack, and that's, or maybe you won't, or if you're going to buy a snack, you're going to have a very clear view on what you want and why you want it. And what you definitely find is if any single aspect of a product isn't perfect, consumers are going to kind of find that out, and you're going to spend the next 6 to 9 months getting that feedback from them. So that's just why it's so important to get the taste perfect, get the texture right, deliver more than you say you're going to on the pack. And also just trying to be innovative. We've got 2 ranges coming out at the moment that just genuinely quite unlike anything anyone is doing on the market. And, you know, that it's just that we really feel 3 or 4 years in that you kind of build that confidence and that momentum to really take a product to the next level. So I think we've always created great products, but I do, in addition to focus groups, we get some professional testing done by 100 people. And now I just know with 100% confidence that our products beat the competitors on taste, texture, any metric you want to apply. And it's exciting, particularly when the products are natural and plant-based. So it's that kind of obsession that is important, because ultimately, you know, the exciting thing for us at Tribe is not just making the best products, it's making the best events and experiences and raising as much money as we can for our foundation. And all of those things are immeasurably more exciting if you imagine Tribe as a business selling 30 million rather than 1 million Tribe bars a month.
So how about in terms of getting your product into supermarkets and things, was that a process that was really hard to do? Did you take a long time to do it? Do you have any sort of advice there?
We've been lucky to partner with great people. So, you know, Sainsbury's is our kind of one of our main retail partners, and they've got a great program supporting startups. I would say a great time to be in food and drink. You know, lots of retailers are very supportive of brands like ours. They're looking for innovative, different, ethical brands that try and push the boundaries. The secret to getting into supermarket is about building relationships. And I suppose trying to kind of find that balance between understanding what it is that a retailer is looking for. You know, for example, if Sainsbury's is going plastic-free and snacking, you need to ensure you're kind of delivering that for them. But also for someone like us, we're a kind of different kind of product. We're 100% natural, we're plant-based. And in a sense, trying to show retailer that actually we're part of this amazing wave and movement of people exercising, being healthier, being more kind of natural in how they approach life. And so, yeah, that mixture of understanding what they want, but also sort of communicating the fact that you're bringing a different type of consumer, and that ultimately the kind of trends that you play into as a brand are trends that will play through in the market over the next 5 years.
Do you have any like stories of like your first big order or something where you're up at night sort of wondering if like you'd actually sell anything if you get like another order up?
Yeah, I mean, I'll always remember January is an amazing period for us. I always remember January 2016, where we were running, I don't know, 200 quid a day of Facebook ads, and we were literally getting, you know, hundreds of customers every day, and it was an amazing thing. And the same, I can remember our first WH Smith order last January, which WH Smith was our first retailer. But I mean, it was an amazing feeling to see a purchase order for 20,000 bars, and it just, you know, amazing excitement to feel like you'd kind of grown up in that way, which was really cool.
Were you worried at all that like they'd stop them and then it wouldn't sell and you kind of like not be able to sell them again, or was it kind of like, sweet, it's going to work well?
The challenge with retail, just same with everything, is you're constantly, you know, by its nature, you're always losing customers. You know, it's a constant challenge. Every day you've got to kind of start again. And so, yeah, I think you're always worried, you know, how can you make it sell better? How can you, we've been lucky that we've got a product that people love and buy, but definitely retail is, that is the challenge with it. You're constantly, you're losing customers. So you've got to constantly be gaining new customers and building hopefully that brand loyalty that means you're losing less. But yeah, it's just keeping that momentum. It was one thing that brands like ours would have, and I sort of wonder how you can do it if you're a bigger brand or you're in decline or whatever. Just it's that kind of momentum and constant sense of improvement. We're in here today, it is unrecognizable to how it was like 6 months. And it's often important just to kind of check yourself sometimes and think, God, you know, that was only 3 months ago and look how much we've moved on and improved. I think that's the only way that you can like confront any challenge in the business, is just to say, like, just to keep improving, because obviously there are a thousand ways that you need to be better, but just getting that speed of improvement ultimately is what will help you survive and hopefully in due course, you know, become a real kind of household name.
Yeah, you know, the whole like day one mentality, like every day is like the first day, you have to kind of just walk in and sort of approach like what can be improved, what's going wrong and stuff. And
totally, yeah. I think
that's... Got any tips for how you've kept that like momentum of like focusing on improvement?
Like I say, you've got the constant challenge of customer feedback, customers helping you be better. And I think we're lucky that, you know, I was just saying it earlier this morning, we're lucky that, you know, amazingly people like you that are sort of invested in the business, people that are kind of really supportive of that journey. And we're really lucky that the Tribe community, the people that attend the events, the shareholders and others just love seeing it. So I suppose you love kind of...
Yeah, I think it's definitely like a big shift in the general like modern economy towards like more businesses that have another purpose besides just making money and things. And like,
exactly,
if you're looking at the millennial sort of mindsets, and like they're much more into things that have a purpose, and like the millennial investors who don't have necessarily like a huge amount of money yet, but like in the next 10 years they're going to be like earning more money than any other like category kind of thing. And it's going to be like huge change with like where people are spending their money and stuff. So it's already growing like crazy, but it's only going to get bigger in terms of like kind of areas that you're in. So awesome.
Totally. No, I couldn't agree more.
Oh, that's good. Do you manufacture in the UK then, or do you export? How did you go about first finding them and then lessons along the way?
Again, all about trying to build a relationship with a factory and hoping someone's going to take a bit of a punt.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I suppose if you're a massive brand, then you know, you're able to kind of guarantee that there's going to be X thousand pounds of business every month, whereas if you're a kind of startup business trying to make trail mix for the first time. But we're really lucky. I mean, people really like, definitely fills your heart, you know, when you think of, you know, when you look back and you think of the number of people that would have taken a really big chance on you, really helped you, and you know, lots of our manufacturing partners have really sort of supported the mission and kind of helped us. But I think again, it's just about building that relationship. And the risk of taking something obvious, the way factories are really profitable is by being very mechanical and making you know, getting the line working with one product, not needing to change and clean the line the whole time. So if you go to a factory and say, I want to make just 5,000 bars, you're not actually a great customer, because what they want is someone to go, I want to make 200,000 bars of the same variety, because that just means you can turn the factory on and it's just going to run and run.
Yeah.
So I think it's finding the partners, but we've been very lucky with places always in the UK that have helped us on that journey. Because things go wrong. We've got better at making sure they don't go wrong, but things have gone wrong. You've got to be very careful. Well, I mean, once we had a kind of goji and coconut bar that had too much kind of liquid, or, you know, was kind of secreting coconut too much. So, you know, you can have a problem.
Yeah, I've certainly had like a few sort of like vegan bars in the last few years where it's like they kind of might pack like really oily or something, and you'd be like, whoa, this is a bit odd.
And exactly. I mean, and these are just the kind of things that, you know, particularly when you're developing new products, you've got to get right.
Yeah, it's funny. But you've never had any like major mess ups, like they put like nuts in something that didn't have nuts?
No. Nothing is ever, you know, touch wood, as bad as you think it's going. I mean, actually, one of the worst things we had is last week, we had this amazing thing this new year called Golden Tickets. So in people's Tribe packs, they'd get a golden ticket and they'd either get free 1 year Tribe subscription, or they'd get 50% off merchandise, or they'd get a free beanie or something. It was good. I mean, it worked very well until we realized that we hadn't checked how many free 1 year subscriptions were in the packs. We started getting way more emails than we thought we were getting, saying, awesome, I've just won a 1 year subscription. And we realized that the printers had overprinted the one-year subscription golden tickets. Potentially, it could have been a lot worse.
That's lucky. Did you have any tracking in place for that? As in, did you know, like, how many codes were created and if they had a code and they just get this ticket and, like...
No, that was the problem.
So I could just email you, hey, I've got a golden ticket.
Well, short answer is we didn't know how many of the printers had printed, so we didn't check anyway.
Yeah, that's been super worrying.
It wasn't very clever, but it was one of those things that actually wasn't bad at all in the end. But you thought, my God, if the printers had printed like 1,000 rather than 40,
yeah,
it would have been very expensive.
That would have been really awkward. Yeah, that was just a great way to get people to hate you.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to make like a bit of a mistake. You learn from it and you haven't lost too much.
Yeah, there's a great book I read once called like Black Box Thinking. It's basically about how to avoid mistakes. And if mistakes happen, how to learn from them. And anyway, it's all about how in different cultures, probably in England, we're not very good, or in the UK, we're not very good at sort of being quite direct.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, I think the example they applied was to the airline industry, where things might be going wrong. And there might be sort of a culture where, I don't know, someone was the pilot and they couldn't be questioned. And it's really interesting. It's a really interesting point, you know, how you create a culture that where, because ultimately in any culture, if something's going wrong, there's probably someone there that knows why it's going wrong, but does or doesn't want to communicate. And I suppose the more you can create a culture that communicates that difficult point, whatever it is, the more you're likely to improve.
Did you make any major mistakes when you were first starting, I guess? Then to go a bit further back in time.
I can remember we used to pack the boxes ourselves for about the first 6 months. And that was probably a bit of a mistake. Probably.
Yeah, just took too much of your time.
I remember like Thursdays packing 1,500 tribe packs.
Yeah.
Took too much time, but no, not really. I mean, I say it, and you know, I'm very lucky, mainly because you know Rob, who is in charge of operations, is very, very good and you know, good at doing that. I might add that definitely good. I do marketing rather than operations. I don't think we'd have been so mistake free if it had been the other way around.
Cool. Okay, so where do you see things going in 5 years' time?
We're obviously in this slipstream of natural plant based foods that's growing amazingly quickly, and sort of, you know, a bit of a sort of plant revolution going on. I'd love us to be the leading UK natural vegan performance brand, and I'd love to see us, and we already operate internationally through Amazon, but I'd love to see us in 2 or 3 other jurisdictions. And yeah, sort of just really kick on. I feel like we're kind of in a position to grow and really become the kind of Europe's leading, you know, natural vegan brand, and just benefiting from hugely improved products that we develop, but also just benefiting from a huge expansion in the market and different ways that consumers are behaving. And I suppose the dream is, we obviously have the Tribe Freedom Foundation and tribe events that we kind of grow alongside the business. And yeah, we'd love to see that growing. You know, we're doing some amazing events all around the world this year, from hikes to runs to rides, and all of those events raised for the foundation, which is an anti-trafficking charity that we operate. And yeah, I suppose I'd love to see those events keep growing and moving towards being the kind of Red Bull of running, cycling, but also the foundation. Love to see the foundation. I think it's not inconceivable the foundation could have an income of something like £5 to £10 million in that time period. And one of the things we're most excited about this year is that the foundation's going to start delivering its own projects. Up to this date, we've always been a kind of grant maker. So it's supporting amazing UK anti-trafficking charities, but we're going to start developing our own UK projects, which would be amazing. We did a project called the Hike for Freedom last year with the Helen Bamber Foundation that was all about training a group of human trafficking survivors to take on Three Peaks.
Cool.
And we're going to develop that this year. So working with 2 or 3 partner charities, our goal is to essentially apply everything we know as a tribe community about fitness, well-being and health. To supporting trafficking survivors to sort of rebuild their confidence. Because if it's the case that somebody working in an amazing job in London can genuinely, I believe, really change and transform their life and confidence by doing an event, and surely that's the case times 10 for somebody that's had a experience or been trafficked. And so if we can kind of bring that confidence and well-being and sense of challenge to those that need it the most, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. It would. First got you into the anti-trafficking as a thing, was there like a specific reason, or you just felt like the cause? Did you read like a specific book that got you into that?
Not really. I mean, I used to work just after uni, before I became a corporate lawyer, at a place called the Centre for Social Justice. that was a kind of UK anti-poverty think tank in Westminster. And they were very focused on the issue of trafficking. So I suppose I first became aware that modern slavery even existed when I was working there. And then, yeah, I think it was around the time, 2011, 12, when we were doing Run for Love, that lots of kind of quite high profile trafficking and grooming incidents, like the one in Rotherham, came into public consciousness. So yeah, I think it was just an issue that I read about, learned about, and just felt really passionate about trying to do something to stop it. And I think it's something that really, for the whole tribe community, that they, it's an issue that when people find out about, they almost can't believe it, because you're slightly in disbelief that the concept of, you know, the concept of slavery can seem so remote to people's day-to-day lives, but it is going on often closer to you than you might think. And then we just kind of, I suppose you start something and you want to keep it going and try and finish what you started.
That's really cool that you're doing these things, not that the problem exists. But yeah, it's very weird, like the world is, and it's hard to conceive of all the things that are going wrong, like in the moment, and you sort of read about it in the news later and you kind of, it's like a thing that happened. You don't really feel like, oh, actually it's going on like right now. Then
I totally agree. You can be so disconnected, can't you?
Yeah, kind of, you know, you read about, like, every few years there's always sort of some person gets discovered who's got like a bunch of kids in their basement or something. But there must be kids in someone's basement right now somewhere, but you don't really quite feel it. This is a thing that sort of is a problem that you should be thinking about or something.
And I totally agree. Yeah.
And quite in the moment of what's actually the reality of the world kind of thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Head, weird stuff. Anyway, going into the more final questions, do you have a very early and distinct memory from your childhood?
I mean, I used to love football. I can just remember loving is playing football. But most of my memories under the age of 8 are playing football with my siblings, brothers.
Is there one specific like memory from that where you remember like scoring a goal or something?
Yeah, I still quite like slide tackling, but no, I can't think.
Interesting.
I remember playing football on Saturdays in Massey Park.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just like starting to see what people's kind of their memories are and how things like happen in people's brains. I certainly remember like I used to really love football when I was like a little kid, and like I used to play a lot with like my neighbour. And then I went to my first school, and my sister had told like the guys, because she was like older than me, that I played football. So for some reason I got to play like this one game with like a bunch of old kids. I wasn't that great, but somehow I got kicked the ball, and like from quite far away, just sort of like went for like kicking at the goal. It just flew into like the top corner perfect, and everyone thought I was awesome. And then, like, I wasn't, but, like, I remember that first goal where everyone thought I was super awesome for a bit until they kind of found out over the preceding weeks that I wasn't that good.
Very cool.
I just remember being, like, really cool for, like, a day.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I had a memory from your half memories. Yeah. So there we go. Cool. And then what would you say has been the kindest thing someone has done for you?
Yeah, when you think of what your parents have done, well, both in terms of the kind of everyday stuff, when I think of like a really kind and sent us to like private schools and stuff, I do often think about what an amazing thing it is, what your parents have done for you and kind of helping you, giving you an education and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a hard one to kind of be so grateful for, because it kind of is like a permanent thing in your life already. It's not like a weird, like someone came out of the middle of nowhere and just gave you a car or something sort of crazy. It's like,
yeah,
oh, it's my parent. They always like, it's nice and gives to me and supports me. And you kind of, it's just sort of like a constant.
Yeah, it's a constant. I'm not sure it's a good answer to your question, but that definitely was the thing that came to mind the most. I still haven't, as not yet being a parent, got my head around the like enormous sacrifices and kindness that on a kind of ongoing basis that, you know, your parents do kind of do.
What's the one thing that most excites you about having a child?
I think it must be the most amazing thing to kind of bring something into this world and sort of support it. I don't know. Yeah. It's just amazing. You know, so I grew up in a really happy family. So I suppose starting to try and kind of recreate what we had there, and that kind of, you know, I mean, lots of what I believe in and is great about community ultimately comes from, you know, having an amazing family. So I think probably the idea of kind of recreating that.
What do you think would be, if you could give one piece of advice to yourself as a 22-year-old? What would you say?
I think if I was to believe two things in life, I do think the most important thing is to kind of give everything. If you give everything, then you'll never be regretting anything, because you know you gave everything your best. So, you know, try hard. And I do believe a massive lesson from running that applies to so much of life, whether it's, you know, work or everything, is just to kind of keep going. And there's real value in just keeping going. There's going to be ups and downs, but you know, if you keep at something and keep trying and you don't give up, then you'll ride through the natural ups and downs of life. I think sometimes if you don't give everything or you give up, that's where things go wrong in life. But yeah,
awesome, really useful tip. And on that, I think that's a good place to end, really. Yeah, is there anything we can do for you as in
Any calls to action and stuff?
Well, come to a Tribe event. Check us out online. And please, in the process, support the Tribe Freedom Foundation for the amazing work we do. And not to mention trying our delicious new white chocolate raspberry and double chocolate protein bars that we've just launched.
Sounds all right with me. You have to do all of these things. Awesome.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
My pleasure.
What a great interview. It's really great to see someone that's really building something that has a purpose, besides the fact the brand itself is just clean nutrition products that's completely vegan friendly. They've also got a whole bunch of charity things that's trying to change the world and just connecting people to get them to do fun events together and building more social connections, helping with loneliness. Lots of cool things that they're doing all at once. So yeah, that was really nice. And just lots of insights from Tom about how to build a business and how to like get over your problems. And I think his final tip about just giving everything and going for it is so true. You know, life is too short to not really put your energy into things, to sort of sit around on the sidelines. You do have to be in it to win it, as they say. And also lots of insights for anyone interested in food businesses, like how they actually work or wanting to start one themselves, in terms of like how to get the food to be perfect and how to use other people to help you with that when you are starting a business that you have no actual professional skills in. It's quite interesting in the way they built the team to do different things, relying on their strengths, even though they've never even done this before. It's very fascinating. So thanks again for Tom coming on. And if you are in the UK or Europe, you can get involved with some of their marathon events and help raise some money for charity. Or, of course, just eat some of their food, which is really, really good and healthy. And yeah, I am very much enjoying the bars that he gave me after the interview. And I've eaten all of them already. So hopefully maybe they give me some more, or maybe I just buy some because they're so good. Anyway, thanks for listening. Have a nice day. Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.